Okay, so Tracy and I are going to share the podium and talk about strategic mission investment at the national and the chapter level. We have no relationships to disclose. So our learning objectives today seem like a lot, but really they're, broad range from national to chapter-based. You're going to be able to describe a multi-year approach to strategic planning and grants management and how you can maximize your return on investment. Identify practical steps to shift your culture so you have to, you don't have to be everything to all people. We're going to discuss how increased focus combined with flexibility in the utilization of all resources allow for better investment in local initiatives and then result in higher impact. We're going to discuss how strategic change in a national organization can be beneficial for field staff while allowing flexibility and local control. Describing how national and field entities can work collaboratively to create change in policies and practices to improve program effectiveness and efficiency. And discuss how program data can effectively help end users manage program initiatives at a local level. So for those of you who may not be familiar with the March of Dimes, our mission is to improve the health of babies by preventing premature birth, birth defects, and infant mortality. And just to give you a little lay of the land of our structure, we have a national office that's based in New York, and then we have 48 chapters which cover all of the states, D.C., and Puerto Rico. So you'll hear us talk today about chapters, and that's what we're talking about, is the state-based entities that are doing the work in the communities. So in 2003, the March of Dimes launched the prematurity campaign to combat the rising preterm birth rate in the U.S. Chapters started to shift their focus to support grants with a prematurity focus, but rates continued to rise. And so in 2011, in an effort to help chapters be more strategic, nationally, March of Dimes set a goal to reduce preterm birth by 8% by 2020. To support this national goal, all of our chapters set a state goal to reduce preterm birth within their state. And to help them achieve their state goals, nationally we provided them with guidance and tools that they would need to achieve that overall goal. So what did our road to strategic mission investment look like? So we started off with traditional grant giving, which included a very broad RFP process. We wanted to help our chapters move towards a more focused RFP, either around the programs that they were funding or around the areas where they were funding, so looking at the data and racial and ethnic disparities, ultimately landing on strategic mission investment. And then on our program planning side, we had an annual planning process, so a yearly cycle. We had chapters move towards to chapter-directed mission investment, which we're going to talk about more in a moment, but it was really about flexibility within a framework. And then again, getting to strategic mission investment. So what were we doing previously around annual program planning? So annual program planning limited our chapter's ability to think and act long term. We all know that public health solutions can take a long time, and by having our chapters really looking at things with a yearly lens, limited them. So we wanted to give them the ability to think longer, think 2 or 3 years out, and really invest in programs that were going to have a greater impact. We also, the chapters, we had given them the ability to choose from a really seemed like an unlimited number of priorities towards a very broad goal, and we wanted to bring them all in and focus on what was our overall goal. Our goal was to reduce prematurity, and so if we could get them to all focus on that goal, it would help limit the number of activities that they were doing and thus have a greater impact. We were trying to be everything to everyone, so we have volunteers, we have staff, we have partners in our communities, and we don't want to say no to anyone. So we really used the focus that we were bringing to help us hone in on where we needed to invest all of our time and energy and our resources. And it helped us to be better partners and to be better in our communities. And then there's always that dreaded mission creep where you have strong partners, so you don't want to say no to them, and you want to be involved in activities that maybe you're not best aligned with. And so being able to say to one of your partners, you're better at this. Let us support you and help you, but we're going to focus on prematurity because that's what we're really good at. And then in terms of our annual grant giving, we had multiple funding priorities for chapters to choose from when they were giving their grants, and we all know that it's much harder to see the impact of smaller grants than it is if you're giving a larger grant. And our grants weren't always targeting the areas of greatest need, so we really needed to start looking at the data. Take a step back, Look at what data you had in your communities and determine in your state where should you be focused and what are the highest priority issues. And our grants were being seen as a separate portfolio almost from all of our other resources. So we have the human capacity of our chapter staff. We have our leadership abilities, our materials that we have, our conferences, and all of the other things that March of Dimes does, but our chapters were often seeing grants as a separate opportunity. So we needed to bring that all together and focus the grants and all of everybody's time and other resources as a whole. And then because we were just seen as a grantor rather than a partner always in giving out grants, we didn't get the visibility that we would have liked to have, and so we really needed to move from being seen as just a funder to actually being a partner and a doer in the communities.
So if you weren't convinced already that we needed to focus more, this is what our funding priorities looked like in 2009. And part of this is just the fact that maternal child health is so large, and the things that we can do to help give a healthy start are myriad. So the priorities kind of outline that. And I know you can't read any of those, and that's sort of on purpose, just to give you the idea of we were giving way too broad of an opportunity to our chapters, and therefore we were really diffuse in the impact that we were able to have. Oops. Here's the arrow. And then coupled with that, we had what was going on in the real world that was also impacting upon us. Of course, the recession of 2007-2008 affected everyone, especially nonprofits, in the sense that we all experienced cuts to staffing and to funding ability. So our grant lines became smaller, our staff overall became smaller, and that included our program delivery staff. And we also really had to then take a hard look internally and say, so when you have fewer resources, you have to justify even more how you're using those resources. And we really found a difficulty describing the impact of our mission investments on the population served. We were good at counting how many people we were reaching or how many materials were going out, but it was really hard to describe the impact on changes in knowledge or changes in behaviors and pregnancy outcomes because we were so diffuse. And we also realized that while we were working very hard to be seen as a leader in the community, March of Dimes was not always getting maybe the credit that it deserved for making things happen, because we were often spreading our resources, and so we couldn't say we did this because we weren't focused on that one thing. So Kelly's going to tell you what we did about that.
So I mentioned before chapter-directed mission investment, and this is sort of how we moved away from traditional grant giving and program planning. Our Texas chapter actually was leading the way for us. They were really the first ones to say, we need to look at how we do our grant giving and we invest our time and our energy in our state, and we need to have more flexibility to be able to do that. And so in 2005, they developed the first chapter-directed mission investment plan. And really the crux of what they did was they wanted more flexibility with their grant line. So there were restrictions around what you could and couldn't do with your grant line, and they wanted to be able to move money from their grant line to support other activities like professional fees or evaluation. And in the past, we didn't have the ability to do that. And I'll give you an example. If they were doing 10 trainings across the state and they were giving 10 grantees money to hire a trainer to come in and train them on, say, group prenatal care, they could now move money from their grant line and put that into professional fees and contract directly with that agency to provide that training, so they got the economy of scale instead of giving out all of these little grants. So that was the kind of thing that our chapters were starting to say, hey, we need to think about this a little differently. We need to do things differently. So Texas piloted that from 2005 to 2008, and we really started to see that it was working. So we started to allow other chapters to do that. And so slowly, some of our bigger chapters that were more resourced were able to do that with more staff. And then while they were sort of working out all the kinks of that, we nationally were refining that process into what we have today, which is strategic mission investment that every chapter now has. So now every chapter has an overall goal, and they have a strategic mission investment plan that runs 2 to 3 years. And we're going to talk a little bit about what is strategic mission investment. So in our chapters, we have volunteer program service committees. So these are the volunteers that help drive our work in our chapters. And they lead an annual strategic planning process. The reason it's annual is we want them to go back and look at their plan every year. We want them to plan 2 to 3 years out, but we don't want them to just rest on their laurels that that plan is right and that's where we should be going for 3 years. We want them to go back and just tweak it and look and make sure they're on the right path and that nothing has changed. We ask them to get together in the initial planning process and come up with one overall goal. That goal must be around prematurity prevention, so a preterm birth rate reduction in their state based on their data. Once they've developed that goal, they're going to look at key mission priorities. They are limited to 3 key mission priorities. So how are they going to drive their work in their state to reach that goal? So again, we're taking all of those priorities that we had on that slide and we're really funneling them down and saying, you must focus your activities. And they need to use their data. They need to use their vital statistics data. They need to use the data that comes from the March of Dimes Perinatal Data Center. They really need to look at where should I be and what should we be focusing on. And then underneath each of those key mission priorities, there are activities. And those activities are built around all of our resources. So we have grants, we have our partnerships, leadership, advocacy, patient education, professional education. So everything the March of Dimes is really good at needs to be brought to bear on these priorities that are going to help them reach their overall goal. And then the chapter, instead of putting out a generic RFP, puts out a very targeted RFP, either geographically targeted or for a specific evidence-based intervention that they want to fund in their state. And then all of the key activities are evaluated, which is a really big, thing because we want to be able to roll up what we're doing at the chapter level nationally to be able to show our impact. So again, it's about flexibility within a framework. So we don't tell the chapters these are the activities or the priorities you must choose, but we do say you need to have an overall goal, and we're going to help you drive to it. We're going to give you the evidence-based interventions. We're going to do the research, give you all the information you need, and then they have to choose within that framework how they're going to get to that goal in their state. So some of you may have seen this continuum of impact. It came from ARC and AMCHIP, and we really use this to help guide our process. So if you see at the bottom bubble, the bottom circle, it's process-oriented program and activities, and as you push your way uphill, you go to promising initiatives and evidence-based intervention. So it is an uphill battle. You want to move people away from just the process-oriented. So over the past several years, we have really looked at the research. We are trying to dive into what are the evidence-based interventions that are out there and move our chapters away from funding activities that are just process-oriented or even promising and really move to investing their time and their resources and their dollars in evidence-based interventions that we know work, that we don't have to spend the time to prove. All right, and so our current national priorities. So you look back to that slide that Tracy showed you with lots of words on the page, lots of things going on. We have now honed this down to implementing at least one prematurity intervention to reduce preterm birth, targeting geographies and or racial and ethnic groups with high rates and or high birth volume. And we now have 5 activities or 5 interventions that they really should be focusing on. Birth spacing and interconception care, group prenatal care, elimination of non-medically early elective deliveries, or EEDs, smoking cessation, and access to progesterone shots, or 17P, for women with a history of previous preterm birth. So you can see we are really taking the evidence and saying these are the 5 things we know can drive down the preterm birth rate and that work, and this is what we're telling our chapters they need to be focused on. So Tracy's going to talk through some examples now from an actual chapter of before and after SMI.
So I am very lucky to be able to talk about the Florida chapter. I'm representing many staff and volunteers that were part of this, so I don't want anyone to think that this is something that I can be credited with. Partly I got to watch it from the sidelines and then later became more involved. So before strategic mission investment in Florida around 2009, as I mentioned earlier, it was really hard for us to pinpoint the impact that we were having. Part of this was due to the tools that we had to track the activities of the chapters, and part of it was because we were also looking for big numbers, and that's always a good thing, trying to reach as many people as possible. And so we know that through our activities, whether they were through grants or the other things like leadership and partnerships, advocacy that Kelly mentioned, we reached approximately almost 44,000 people in the state of Florida in 2009. But when we dug deeper, we noticed that almost 80% of those were through educational materials, where it was really, really hard for us to be able to say, well, did they learn anything from that? It's great that we had that kind of spread and visibility, but we weren't able to document what kind of change that actually had. And so at that time, the Florida chapter decided that they really needed to narrow their priorities. So Florida was one of kind of the early adopters of this new strategic mission investment approach. They have now narrowed this down to three. So between 2009 and 2014, it was a process of winnowing down. And so you'll see that number one is all about risk reduction for preterm birth, and specifically in Florida, smoking cessation for pregnant women, promoting equity in birth outcomes, because as in every other state and in the country as a whole, there's a great disparity between outcomes for Black women and every other group of women. Implementing programs to address that, and then enhancing services for women with chronic diseases, because we know that that can be a great contributor to preterm birth. Number two, enhancing care, prenatal care, through the centering pregnancy model of group care. And number three, and actually it should be, instead of initiating, continuing a quality improvement program related to preterm birth prevention. And in Florida at that time and continuing today, it's to address late preterm birth by preventing early elective deliveries. So scheduled C-sections and scheduled labor inductions before 39 weeks when there's no medical reason to do so. And what I want to point out about this is these are not just funding priorities. As we've been saying, we were trying to really get to the point where this represented all of our activities. And so in particular with quality improvement, for example, the Florida chapter was a founding member of their state's perinatal quality collaborative, which is now very widespread. Many states have these collaboratives that focus on measures to improve patient safety. And in this case, of course, obstetric and neonatal in particular. So we were a founding member of that and continue to serve on the steering committee to set the direction of that organization, which has resources beyond the ones that we can provide. So it's leveraging what we have to utilize resources from others as well. And also with smoking cessation, we have become one of the leaders in the state in promoting specialized smoking cessation services for pregnant women, because their needs are different than smokers in general. So this kind of gives you a look at where we were and where we have come to be. So speaking to what I said earlier about resources shrinking and becoming smaller, in 2009 we had 4 full-time and 3 part-time program staff in the state of Florida dedicated only to mission delivery. 2014 we have 3 full-time staff. So we lost 2.5 full-time equivalents. Leadership volunteers, we had about 57 in 2009, and in 2014, we have approximately 29. So the number is decreased, which, of course, we would love to see it continue to grow, but the volunteers we have are higher level, and more of them have a statewide reach. So we're able to have a broader impact on those priorities that we've chosen. And the remainder of those 57 are still engaged. They're just engaged in different ways, not necessarily leadership. So part of it was also working with each volunteer to find the niche where they really belonged. The community grants budget, we lost about $125,000 over those 5 years, again, due to the recession and the fact that budgets had to be cut everywhere nationally. And the other program budget, so that included staffing, materials, conferences, et cetera, also was reduced by about $85,000. So resources clearly were fewer. But what we saw was a really interesting shift in our giving and in the size of our giving. So we distinguish our funding between community grants, which are things over $3,000, so programs, things that are seen to be able to have more impact, and community awards, which are $3,000 and less, which are more of those kind of one-time conferences or, you know, an educational event in a community. So our community grants, in 2009, we had 24, and they addressed 14 different priorities. But by 2014, we had gotten it down to 6 grants, and you can see in the line below, the average more than doubled. So we went from our average grant being $19,000 to being more than $43,000. And we know that a greater investment can mean more impact if it's targeted and if it's followed and you know, tracked. Our community awards grew by just a little bit, but in a state the size of Florida, that's not surprising. It's a very large state. There are 67 counties, lots of people spread over a great distance. So our community awards grew a bit in number, but the average amount of them grew as well. So again, we saw that that was a more wise investment of those resources. And if we look at it this way, one of the objectives that we had through this process was to invest the dollars in fewer grants that could have higher impact. So more focused and looking only at those priorities. And as you can see, what I want to draw your attention to are the two bars on the furthest right, which said our investments of $25,000 or more grew significantly in the course of those years. And the fact is, anybody in any kind of nonprofit, public health, anything, will tell you you can't really do much with less than $25,000.
So nationally and locally, we were gaining a lot through strategic mission investment. There's been a real buzz around this word collective impact now for a couple of years, but we really saw more active engagement and collaboration with our MCH partners, and bringing all of them together really helped us strengthen our high-level engagement. As you heard Tracy said, there were less volunteers in Florida, but they were engaged at a higher level and had a broader reach. We were able to enhance the visibility of the March of Dimes mission. We were really seen as a leader, particularly around early elective deliveries, but many different areas that we work in. And we were able to really focus our resources on the areas of greatest need and highest burden, so really looking at that data. We had a framework to reach an overall goal. We had the ability to focus on evidence-based interventions and to articulate our needs and results to potential funders. So we not only give out grants, but we also receive grants. And so being able to talk about what we do and then report back on what we have done with grant dollars that we receive has been a really big advantage for us. And then we also are able to roll up our impact into a greater national reach. So you'll see there's some of these impact reports in the back of the room, and there's some up here if anybody wants one after. But each year we produce this community program impact report, looking at the impact of our programs across the U.S. and Puerto Rico. So if you look at the graph on the right, between 2008 and 2014, our grant lines reduced by almost $3 million. That was the time of the recession and the cutbacks. However, we managed to reach almost the same amount of women and professionals. But when we dig a little deeper and we look at those numbers, in 2008, we reached 1.24 million women. But 500,000 of those women were reached through NICU Family Support, which was not a prematurity prevention initiative. Another 111,000 were reached with educational messages around folic acid, and 200,000 were reached with prematurity risk prevention activities. If we fast forward and look at 2014, and you'll see this in the impact report, we reached almost the same amount of women, 1.2 million women, but our activities more closely aligned with prematurity prevention. This time, 500,000 women were reached with prenatal education and activities, 200,000 with pre- and interconception activities, and 120,000 with enhanced prenatal care, which includes group prenatal care. So you can see that our focus was shifting towards the activities that were really going to focus on prematurity reduction. So Tracy's going to come back and talk about Florida now in this context.
One example of the impact we were able to have, I forget that you're 5 feet taller than I am, or I'm 5 feet shorter than you are, One of the examples that we saw where a much more focused process could really allow us to have greater impact was through the smoking cessation activity priorities in Florida. So SCRIPT stands for, and I'm going to read it to make sure I don't get it wrong, Smoking Cessation and Reduction in Pregnancy Treatment. And it is an evidence-based program that has been proven to be effective in helping pregnant women quit smoking and stay quit. So if we start at the bottom of the pyramid, the March of Dimes in Florida invested a little over $81,000 in order to bring the SCRIPT training to Florida. But what they were able to do was to leverage their partnership with the Healthy Start coalitions in Florida. There are 42 of them around the state. So they are the feet on the ground that we don't have. So they're a critical partner for us because they have local presence in almost every county in the state. We were able to leverage that, and they agreed to have their staff, their community health workers, and other frontline staff be trained in the SCRIPT model. And as that began to build, our partnership with the Florida Department of Health also yielded a surprise boon of over $600,000 from the state of Florida from tobacco settlement money that had been the object of everyone's desires for years, and the maternal child health people within the state were never able to get that money freed up to actually use for community activities. But because of the nature of this program, the partners involved, the state found some money, miraculously, as we know can happen sometimes. So our tiny investment, more than sixfold, increased. We trained over 400 Healthy Start providers, and this was through the end of, actually through June of this year. And so now those people have been let loose, and they're actually implementing the program in the community with the pregnant women directly. So we anticipate thousands of pregnant women, minimally, will be reached by the time this is over. A second example, rather, of collective impact in Florida regards our work on early elective delivery. So again, starting with the smallest circle, March of Dimes invested funds, and it was over a period of time, so I didn't calculate, but the point being, we did have some financial stake in this, but we were also leaders because we helped found that Perinatal Quality Collaborative and worked very closely and continued to work closely with it and with leadership from the Hospital Association and from the Department of Health in particular, as well as with representatives from ACOG and A1. So together with that, we were able to get the University of South Florida Child Center for Maternal and Child Health, which actually houses the Perinatal Quality Collaborative in Florida, to provide in-kind in terms of staffing and resources, as well as leadership for the collaborative. The state of Florida was also a funder of the collaborative and provides leadership by serving on the steering committee. Florida hospitals and individual providers, we were able to get them, to work with them, to buy into this process of quality improvement. And what we saw in the end, between the years of 2012 and 2014, was a 50% reduction in early elective deliveries. You don't see a 50% reduction in just about anything. Now, while I would like to say, hey, March of Dimes did that, we were certainly one of the leaders, but it wasn't just us. It was critical that we had those partnerships. But if we hadn't been this focused, those partnerships might not have come together. So we're very excited about these results, and we hope in years to come to present more. So what did we learn from all of this on the local level? The importance of volunteer leadership. Volunteers can get things done. It was a volunteer who works with us, who works for the Department of Health, that was able to find that tobacco settlement money and work to get it directed towards the SCRIPT training. It was a volunteer who became the chair of the Florida ACOG section, who was able to corral her fellow OBGYNs to support the quality improvement work. It really came from the bottom up. While our national office was thinking about these types of improvements, it was really happening at the grassroots level, and we were able to eventually meet in the middle and really combine this into a greater scale effort. freedom within a framework, which is one of the first things I learned at the March of Dimes, and is really so critical. You have to give people want guidelines. They don't want to just be free to do whatever, but they do need room to be able to tailor it to their community and their state, and that's what we have through strategic mission investment. Focus equals impact, and I just told you two examples where I think that we see that that's true. We're using our resources more wisely and more efficiently, so even though they're shrinking, we're still able to have significant impact. You need strategic thinkers. You can't do this if everyone thinks, let's just keep doing the same thing and get different results, because that's not going to happen. You need people who are willing to take a risk and to be strategic. And it takes time. You're not going to see results in a year. That's why I can't tell you Script had this percent reduction in smoking yet, because it takes time. And integrating with data systems is critical, because if you do all this but you can't track any of it, then you can't prove that it was successful. And my colleagues will talk more about that.
Okay, so as we wrap up our section, we just want to give you a quick look at an example of focus equals impact. So this is around our efforts to reduce early elective deliveries. So nationally, there was this big push to reduce early elective deliveries. March of Dimes was leading the way. They developed a toolkit with the California Maternal Quality Care Collaborative and the California Department of Health. Early adopters were North Carolina, New Jersey, and Ohio. But the March of Dimes rolled out a pilot project in the five largest states with the 40% of births: California, Florida, Illinois, New York, and Texas. And what we saw in that pilot was an 83% reduction in early elective deliveries when the toolkit was implemented. And so the March of Dimes then took that toolkit and scaled it up to 100 hospitals nationally. But we weren't the only ones who were involved in this effort. So a lot of buzz was created around this. You have the Joint Commission, and you have hospital engagement networks that were funded through CMS. You have the LeapFrog Group. Everybody was looking at the early elective delivery rates. And nationally, what we have seen is a decrease from 2011 of 13.6% down to 4.3% in 2013. So this is just an example of showing true collective impact of us bringing to bear all of our resources on a problem, but also partnering with lots of others who are working in this arena and really being able to drive the results. And hopefully we will do the same thing with prematurity rates as we ramp up our activities around this arena. So we talked a lot about all of this work, strategic mission investment, our grants, but we need systems to support this work. And so I'm going to invite Norm Hess up to talk about an internal system that we're using at the March of Dimes to help us gather all of our data.